The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition, rolling through the happier happy hour. And I'm happy to announce I've been joined by a fine guest live via Zoom. He is Joel Siegel. He is the National Coalition for the Homeless, BAHN, campaign director. Welcome to the show, Joel. Thank you for joining us.
It's an honor to be here, and thank you for playing Stevie Wonder Superstition.
Well, it was your request. That's the least we could do, sir. Let's talk about this national campaign to end homelessness. And this was rolled out on St. Paddy's Day on March 17th of this year. Sir, obviously, it's a noble goal. Is it a practical goal? And what does that look like?
It's a great question. So I was the lead staffer on the Affordable Care Act and the founder of the Universal Healthcare Movement in 2000 and the Global AIDS Movement. And that was in the grassroots. But when I went to Congress and worked for Congressman John Conyers, I was the lead staffer, and we passed those bills. I was the lead staffer on the Hurricane Katrina Relief Act. I wrote that bill, passed that bill. There's a science to passing federal legislation. If you follow it, you can, you know, help people. If you don't follow it, then of course you'll lose. But it's very doable, because there's been an explosion in working families who've been evicted from apartments due to COVID, laid off their job. We see tent cities all across the country. There's never been this kind of visibility since as long as I can remember. I've been working on this issue for over 30 years. But it's good for, you know, everyone to end homelessness. It will stimulate the business sector. If we build millions of new affordable housing, it'll help real estate developers, construction workers, veterans, families, children, seniors, the mentally ill. It's a crisis. It's gone unaddressed for far too long. We have a moral obligation to end homelessness and make housing and healthcare jobs a right for everybody. I will conclude by saying I ran a transitional housing and jobs program in Charlotte, North Carolina in my early 30s. We had a 98% success rate of putting people who were homeless into housing, jobs, to a path to self-sufficiency and a safety net for people like myself who used to be disabled and was homeless. I was homeless myself for a few years, and this is personal to me.
Joel, you know, we people out here living in society, we think to ourselves, you know, perhaps there but for the grace of God go I, but we also think, how did it ever get that bad? For somebody's family, for some individual. And we wonder to ourselves, or at least I have wondered many times, you know, what leads to this homelessness? And I understand, I live in a community, Madison, Wisconsin, not a lot of affordable housing in my town. Very hard to make the rent. I know that part. But, you know, it seems like there's something more, something that pushes people out of the nest. Joel, what do you attribute most homelessness to, or is it, you know, a different story every time?
Great question. By the way, I'm a Green Bay Packers fan since I followed Bart Starr when I was a kid. So I just want to say, go Green Bay. It's very complex, but I'll give you the short answer is between 1981 and 1985, under the Ronald Reagan administration, we had a $80 billion cut in affordable housing, mainly public housing. I was working on public housing called scattered sites, smaller, you know, units for low-income people. We stopped building those scattered sites in the 80s and the 90s, and that really was the beginning of the crisis. We saw an explosion of homeless shelters, you know, soup kitchens. I'm 62, I never saw homelessness when I was growing up. So we don't have a federal housing policy for low-income people and the middle class and working families. How do you change that? The Congress and local state officials, with pressure from the civil society, have to do something that people in government don't do anymore, and that's solve a problem. It's not that hard. I'm a good government activist. I've spent my career in government. Government will work, but we have to push it to work. The other contributing factors was what's called deinstitutionalization. Under the administration of Ronald Reagan, hundreds of thousands of the mentally ill were released from mental health institutional settings without any follow-up plan, which is quite cruel. I call it cruel and unusual punishment. There was, under the Clinton administration, a deep cut in welfare benefits. That was another contributing factor, especially impacting women and children. Then you had a war on drugs, which was a failure. So you had an explosion of young, mainly African-American men coming out of jail with nowhere to go. All this created a perfect storm of what we call homelessness today. And then you have the vagaries of an economy that go up and down during recession cycles with no safety net and no backup. And with COVID-19, an explosion in unemployment, and all these are the main contributing factors.
Folks, you are listening to The Devils, Advocates Radio Show. Find guest live via Zoom. He is Joel Siegel with the National Coalition for the Homeless. Now, Joel, I understand your group, and it's an interfaith group. Lots of people come together trying to influence outcomes and end homelessness. And some of that comes down to lobbying the Biden administration. And what does that pressure look like? How do you exert pressure on the Biden administration? It takes more than the president. Obviously, it's going to take some legislative action as well. So what's the plan, Joel?
Great question. Well, first of all, so the National Coalition for the Homeless is the longest existing homeless advocacy organization in the country. Been there for about 47 years. We did have an interfaith launch because we know historically the interfaith community has led a lot of social justice movements, Martin Luther King probably being the best example, 60 civil rights movement. The way you pass legislation, first you got to get members of Congress to introduce bills. Then the White House has to get involved. The legislation that we're working on, one is Maxine Waters' End Homelessness Bill, which would provide 500,000 housing vouchers for people who are living in shelters or hotels or in tents, who can then get a fast track to an apartment. The second would be AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's bill, which would repeal the Faircloth Amendment, which bans all public funding for public housing. I want your listeners to hear this. Senator Faircloth, who's from my state of North Carolina, in a very stupid, stupid bill, said there will be no more federal funding for public housing. Now, that makes no sense at all. And that was done basically to appease kind of scared white people in the suburbs who feared that black people and poor people were going to go to their neighborhoods. Unfortunately, that caused a major crisis. So we want to repeal that bill, the Faircloth bill. So, and then as someone who's drafted over 30 bills, we're going to draft our own, or I'm the author of the bill Medicare for All that Bernie Sanders ran on, but actually I wrote. And we're going to create our own gold standard bill with the input from people who are homeless, were formerly homeless, providers. If you want to write legislation, you got to get the impacted people, the experts who work in the field to help draft the legislation. You cannot leave it up to well-intentioned 24-year-old staffer on the Hill.
I know that Elizabeth Warren's history was through the bankruptcy side. And she often talks about the number of personal bankruptcies amongst people that had health insurance, and hence right. the need for something like Obamacare, the ACA. The solutions being offered by this organization seeking to end homelessness nationwide, is it simply a housing solution? Is it affordable medical accessibility, mental health care, drug rehab? Is it a combination of all of these factors? And if we do the math, Joel, is it still cheaper than letting our society suffer from homelessness?
Yeah, for 31 years, I've been preaching the gospel of cost effectiveness of housing people and providing comprehensive services to stop the revolving door cycle of homelessness. By the way, I was the one who organized the first congressional hearing on bankruptcies with Elizabeth Warren when she was a Harvard professor, very nice woman, by the way. And I never knew that she'd become a senator. No, you have to deal comprehensively with each population. You got to deal with people who got mental health issues, drug and alcohol issues, problems, maybe interviewing to get a job, lack of childcare, lack of healthcare. These are all things that should not be factors because we're the wealthiest country in the world. And for those who say we can't afford to do universal health care or housing for all, you can't be the richest country in the world and then the poorest at the same time. That makes no sense at all. Let's be logical here. Do you want to pay $176,000 for a jail cell in Rikers Island or $60,000 or $70,000 for a job? Come on, let's do the math. It's way more cost effective to break the revolving door cycle of homelessness. Study after study has proven this. We're being stupid. Stupid means we're you know, why do you want to wait until someone's in a homeless shelter? Or, you know, now you got people killing people in the streets. There would be no one to kill if they weren't in the streets, correct? So it makes sense to house people, provide ladders of opportunity to the middle class. You want people to be tax-paying citizens of the economic mainstream. That's what homeless people who I've dealt with for the last 32 years, that's what they want. I'm not telling you what I want. That is what they want. For those with severe learning disabilities, mental health issues, they need a lot of care. And those programs exist. It's just this invisible universe of homelessness has not been on the radar screen of either party. I can tell you that as someone who worked in Congress on it for 13 years, I didn't see any interest in affordable housing, or I didn't see any interest in ending the homeless problem, even though there's, you know, tens of thousands of tents all over the country. Did you ever think we'd be a nation that handed out a tent to a working family in the freezing cold like they did in Charlotte, North Carolina? Have we no shame? How are you going to go to sleep with, you know, rats and mice trying to get into your tent? How are you going to go to work when it's really hard and you got rocks? You're going to be able to go to work and get a good night's sleep? We can do better than that.
Joel, I often hear, and I'll set a little context. Here in the state of Wisconsin, as I heard Republicans arguing against the implementation of the ACA, and we've never expanded Medicaid here in the state of Wisconsin. The former Republican governor uniquely excluded us from that program. But I also recall going to hearings at the state capitol where they had to backfill the hospital association, I think in one biannual budget, it was $73 million. They had to pay for people that didn't otherwise have health care coverage and would show up at the emergency rooms. So it wasn't that those people weren't already costing us the money. And it seemed like a senseless, inefficient way to deliver health care. So the question I have, I guess, Joel, if there is a question here, does the money exist? You know, we talk about the fact we're the richest country, but we spend a hell of a lot on our national defense and all kinds of other, let's call them priorities. But does the money exist to provide housing for every homeless person in America? And what would the price tag on something like that be, sir?
I love your interviewing skills. You're really asked the most important questions. Thank you. We've run the numbers. We ran them in Congress. Maxine Waters just ran the numbers. It's the cost of two battleships. So it'd be right around 20 to 30 billion for housing, but I would say closer to the range of 80 to 90 billion for comprehensive services like job training, childcare. We got the money. I mean, we always find the money for a war in Afghanistan or Iraq, and boy, we find the money for the wars that we should have never been in the first place. We certainly had the money to bail out Wall Street and the banks. But when it comes to bailing out working families and working people who pay taxes their whole life, all of a sudden we don't have the money. So that's a mythology and a lie put forward by the far right wing that doesn't care about people. And, you know, I call them mummies. They're mummies. They're mummified. You know, they're kind of old and curmudgeon and heartless and cruel, and they have no place in our politics. We got to get them out of office. They don't represent the majority of the American people. Our movement is a majority movement. Majority of Americans support housing people, putting them to work, providing ladders of opportunity to the middle class. There is a vocal minority opposed to anything that's going to help people other than rich people like themselves. So, you know, I don't care about them. I care about people who want, you know, to have a dignity in their life. And having worked with this population for so many years, I can tell you it's a human rights violation in the richest country in the world that's supposed to be based on Judeo-Christian values, not to have housing for people who need housing, especially children. 1.3 million homeless children, have we no shame?
Joel Siegel from the National Coalition of the Homeless. Joel, if people want to get involved, give them a website, please.
Yeah, nationalcoalitionforthehomeless.org.
Joel Siegel, thank you so much, sir. Really appreciate your contribution here on the Devil's Advocates today.
Thank you for having me on your show. Go Packers.
Yeah, go Packers. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. Phone lines open. 844-967-2789. Thank you, Joel.